Welcome to Making Sense, the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee, supported by our lovely friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook, an independent financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now you can have the dream job, the big career, the success that everyone else envies, and still realize, at the end of the day, this isn't actually the life that you want. And that's exactly what happened to Sharon Casey, who you probably already know from listening to her on the radio during her long stint at The Edge, or maybe when she hosted Dancing with the Stars, or maybe you just like following her on Instagram, along with tens of thousands of other people. And if you do know her from all of that, you'll also know that at the top of her game, she walked away. So what actually happens when you step off the success treadmill? What about the bills that need paying, the kids that still need feeding, the future you still have to build? And is there such a thing as a better life on the other side?
Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission and the difference it makes when you understand the money world. For KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of inspirational and unconventional approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a real difference to the lives of their customers. This is Making Kiwi Better Off. This is Kiwi.
Welcome, Sharon Casey. I mean, everyone's going to know who you are already, but in case someone's been living under a rock, radio, TV, now podcast personality, you are probably one of the top female broadcasters in New Zealand, at least to my mind. And I'm someone who, not your level, not even close, but I was ex-radio on the journalism side. And so I saw some of this stuff. It's really competitive getting there, how to get in, how to stay. And then I see someone like yourself who I would listen to on the radio constantly. You were like always there on the airwaves making me giggle. And then you decided you wanted to go. So can we jump right into it? We're just going to jump into the deep end. What was it like when you were getting there, climbing your way into radio? Was it quite hard?
It was quite hard. So I was at The Edge for 18 and a half years. And before that, I was at More FM in the Wairarapa for about 18 months. And so I went to radio school. I was working full time in a music store called Sounds, which I absolutely loved. And I was just kind of applying for any radio show job that I could get. Mm. And then one day, Jimmy Stewart, who was one of my teachers at radio school, he rang me and he goes, "Do you want to work in a music store for the rest of your life, or do you want to work in radio?" And I was like, "I want to work in radio." So great, you've got an interview on the Wairarapa on Wednesday or whatever it was. And so my mum and I drove from Wellington over to Masterton in her little Suzuki Jimmy, did my interview. And my thing was from the start, because that was just kind of how my sisters and I were brought up, is you can do anything you want if you work really hard for it. So you have to just work really, really hard and put your hand up for everything. When I was doing that job, I was earning 21 grand a year and working a 6-day contract. Yeah. And some days you were working 7 days a week and there was no question asked, no extra pay. And you just had to do it because you wanted to get to the next level. So when The Edge was like somewhere I wanted to be by the time I was 25. And so I worked at an Edge first, which is what inspired me to go to radio school. And I just started emailing Leon Ratt, who was the boss of The Edge at the time. And I was like, "I really want to work for you. I love The Edge. What can I do? Can you listen to some audio? Give me some feedback." And he would get me to record news reads and all sorts of things. So he was aware of me. And then when Quit Your Day Job came up, I just went for it and didn't look back and ended up getting the job. And it was like a 6-month contract. And I was like, okay, it's a 6-month contract. I've got to prove that I can get another contract at the end of the 6 months. And I just went real hard and put my hand up for everything. And that's just kind of how I've led my whole career. Maybe a lack of boundaries, but pretty much it's, yeah, I just went hard. And I think attitude's everything. And that was kind of what gave me success in that career was to just have a good attitude.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I feel like a lot of what people looking from outside media might think is that the people maybe expect a lot of prima donnas or like diva behavior and people who don't work hard and have lots of assistants or whatever. And at least my experience is I can think of maybe one person I encountered in my entire career who sort of leaned that way. They still actually worked pretty hard. And I will say they weren't very successful. They weren't one of the big names.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, it's funny because like so many of the people will expect that. And I think sometimes people can start off like, people might be interested in media because maybe they want a byline or maybe they want to be on radio or whatever. Those people, I always say they last a couple of years and then they burn out and they're gone. You have to work so hard, right? Like I'm hearing you say there, you know, you worked 6 days a week, very little pay. You're busy sending through these recordings of yourself being like, how can I improve? What can I do to be better? Can you hire me? And it kind of sets the tone for the whole way through, right? It really is nose to the grindstone, constant push for improvement, hey?
Yeah, and I think that I've had the conversation countless times with younger people coming into the industry, especially people coming out of radio school. Like a lot of people would come out and be like, why am I not doing this show? Or why am I not doing that? And I was like, well, they're not going to fire someone that's been there for 10 years that's rating number one just because you've finished radio school. Like, you have to work for it, but also actually asking for the opportunity. Too many people miss out on money, jobs, all sorts of opportunities because they just sit back against the wall and then they get pissed off because they didn't get considered for something. It's like, well, did you ask to be considered? Did you put your hand up? Did you throw your hat in the ring? And 9 times out of 10, those people didn't. And so that's why they're where they are. They got no one to blame but themselves for that. Because if you're not putting your hand up, no one's going to pick you because no one knows you want it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they want to know that you want it more than everyone else. When there's a queue of people who want a job, they want to know that you're hungry for it, right?
100%.
What was it like getting that feedback when you were so new in your career and you're just like throwing yourself at the mercy of this big boss who you want to hire you and saying, tell me how to be better? Was it ever like a little bruising?
I think it's interesting. So we call it ear checking. It's when somebody will listen. So it could be your coach, it could be your boss or whatever. Someone will listen to it and they'll give you constructive criticism. There are some people that are not constructive, but I've been really lucky that majority of my career, I've always been ear checked constructively. Nice. And we were always taught, you know, if you can give me all the constructive criticism in the world, I'll listen to it. I'll try it. And if it works, great. But if it doesn't work, then I'll try and figure out a different way to do it. But I'll always try it and I won't disregard it because it's constructive and it's only going to make me better. And the better that I am, the more success I'll have in my career, the more money that I'll make, the more, you know, it just all kind of goes hand in hand. But for a lot of people, it is really confronting. And people, because our job is our personality, they can take it as a personal attack on your character of as you as a person. Mm-hmm. So you've just got to kind of put them in two baskets. For me, I'm such a people pleaser, but I genuinely loved like getting constructive criticism. And I remember I just idolized Leon. I still do. And I would sit, it's like sometimes when I was doing days at the Edge and he wouldn't have time to do my air check. And so I would go and sit on the chair next to his desk and wait until he would air check me. And he'd be like, oh, I just don't have, I was like, it's cool, I can wait. And I remember sitting there one day for almost an hour, just waiting for him to be finished doing what he was doing. And then he finally air checked me. Or if he didn't have time, he would play the audio and he'd listen to it. And then he'd get me to tell him what I needed to do better. And that was actually really constructive too, because I would be like, oh, this and that. And it taught me how to coach myself. I always just really enjoyed it because I knew that it was for my benefit. Was there sometimes stuff that I didn't agree with when I got further through my career and I would have that conversation of like, oh, I don't know about that because of this or whatever. And you'd have that conversation. But as long as it was constructive, then I was all for it.
an amazing attitude to have, though. I do think, like, I so agree with you, but I do think some people don't necessarily have that attitude. So that's probably one of the reasons why you got so far, right? I mean,
oh, there's definitely people like still in the industry that are just like, what do they know? You know, like they don't take on that criticism, and you're like, okay, well then your ceiling is here and you're never going to get through that ceiling. You're good, but you're always going to stay the same good because you can't take on constructive criticism on how to burst through that next level. And I watch people that do take that criticism and what they've done in their careers, and they have just soared. And I mean, you're totally right. There's plenty of people that think they're pretty amazing and above everybody else. And you know, that is what it is. But there's also a lot of incredible people that work really hard and are really kind, and they do take on that stuff. And I think after witnessing and being on the receiving end of not so nice people within industry, I really wanted to make an active change to be the person that was constructive, that helped people, that was kind and encouraged people rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
So that when they did get that feedback, it wasn't so like, because they were used to already being kindly and constructively given feedback or encouraged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does actually make sense. And it's incredibly on brand for you. You probably won't remember this at all. I still remember the first time I actually met you in person, because it really blew me away. It was at this industry podcast event where they were like trotting people out to like impress advertisers and be like, here are people who do podcasts and they're so great, you know?
Yeah.
And there was coffees there and you were in a group of people chatting, and I just joined the group and you were like, oh, you don't have a coffee. Do you want one? I'll go get you one. And like dropped the conversation you were having, went and got me a coffee, brought it back. And I was just like, you were probably like one of the biggest stars in the room, and you're like running off to get me, a stranger, or like maybe we followed each other on Instagram, to get me a coffee. And I was just like, I don't know. That just really stuck with me, that you are so nice.
And that to me is like just a normal thing to do.
You just didn't have to.
That to me is just like that's just a normal thing to do, especially when somebody's like new into the group and everyone else has got one and you're like, where the hell is my coffee? Like, yeah, that to me is just the normal, that's just manners, I think.
Well, I think we all know some people who don't have manners.
Oh, do we what? Do we what?
But I mean, to go back to what you were saying earlier about like the radio, you obviously had this real burning feeling where you wanted to succeed. Do you remember what drew you to radio in the first place? And was there anything that particularly lit your fire to be like, I'm going to be on radio and I'm going to be specifically on the edge and I'm going to be the best?
I loved music. Was obsessed with music. I used to write music. I wanted to be a pop star. Realized that was quite unrealistic. But I always just loved music, and I knew I wanted to do something within the music industry. And I also just loved having banter. And I was working at an Edgefest in Wellington for Sounds doing the signing team. And JJ, Mike and Dom were on stage, and Sean Joyce, who was our marketing manager at the time, he was like, you could do that. Like, you could absolutely do that job. And I investigated it more because, like, as a kid, I had made tapes of myself doing Rick D's in the Weekly Top 40, and it was the Sharon D's Weekly Top 40. And I was doing like celebrity gossip about Rachel Hunter doing a fart at a party, and so Rod Stewart broke up with her, and all this sort of stuff. And
wait, is that real?
Yes, it was called Model News. It was like, welcome to Model News.
So good.
It was just like on my dad's dictaphone. My dad had bought his dictaphone home because it was like the 90s, and it was when people used to record their, like, dictate their things, and then their secretary would write it up. And bought it home, and then he gave the tape to his secretary the next day. She was like, it's me talking about Rachel Hunter. I just always like kind of wanted to do something with music and doing something different every day and just making people laugh. And like, I remember I just idolized JJ Feeney, and I used to listen to her all the time. I remember the first time that I heard her, like, in the Palms car park, and I just thought she was so cool. And I used to love like hearing Jason Reeves in the morning being like, hello, you, like he was my best friend. And I'd sleep with the radio on at nighttime. And when we lived in Christchurch, there was a ZM breakfast show called Rick and Katrina. And I just thought they were amazing. And this is so embarrassing. I moved to Wellington from Christchurch. And when we got there, Rick and Katrina didn't broadcast in Wellington. It was Polly and Grant. And I was so gutted because, like, nothing against Polly and Grant because they were great too. But I was just obsessed with Rick and Katrina. And so I wrote a fax and sent it to the ZM fax machine and thought that it was going to Rick and Katrina. And I was like, I miss you guys, listening to you guys so much. The Wellington ZM show is not as good as you guys, blah, blah, blah.
Did it go to Wellington?
Sends to your closest studio. So it went to the Wellington studio and I was like, oh my God. But I remember the first time I met Katrina in a bathroom at like a radio conference years later. And she was like, oh, you're Sharon from The Edge. And I was like, oh my God, you're Katrina from Rick and Katrina. And I like lost. I was absolutely in awe of her. But yeah, it was just listening to women like that and the stuff they were talking about and the things that they would do and just how they lived so unapologetically. I just found it really inspiring. And definitely when I first started in radio, I felt a little bit like I was getting pushed towards a box where you are just kind of like the giggle girl or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I remember saying to my co-host, I feel like this is what's happening to me, not particularly with him, but I don't want to be that. I want to be just as good as the boys. I want to give back what I get. I don't want to sit in the corner and just laugh at the jokes and be like, oh, man. And from then, that was just my MO. It was like, I'm just going to go for it. And I was really encouraged to do that by the people around me. So at first, it was like making people laugh. And then towards the end of my career, it was just like, you want to make people feel included and make people feel something, whether it's happy, sad, inspired, angry. Like, you just want to make people feel something.
I know exactly what you mean about being the giggle girl in the corner. And it's a really easy trap to fall into, I think. And there's some bosses who are totally fine with it, or at least they're fine with it until they decide that you're replaceable. So it's fine as a short-term strategy, I think. And then, yeah, long-term, it really doesn't work out. Plus, not so satisfying, I think, especially when you're someone like yourself who's been working so hard to improve and to be something, then to just turn up and sit in the corner and giggle. No, thank you.
I remember meeting Polly Gillespie once and she was like, you never want to be the giggle bitch. She was like, you never want to be the giggle bitch. You want to like get out there and you strike really get stuck in. And I was like, that's so true. I don't want to be the giggle bitch. You're right, Polly.
Classic Polly to put it like that.
Classic. Yeah.
So you've been doing all of these air checks. You've been working your butt off and then you do get the call up to The Edge, which is amazing. You've been working your socks off to get there. And then you've got this literal dream gig. You've been idolizing these people. Now you're one of them. And there's so many good things about it. Incredibly energizing job in some ways, but I think it also demands a lot of you. So what, you finally get there, and then how did it feel? What was the good? What was the bad?
I just went into it in awe and a sponge. Like, I remember the first time I met JJ in person, I cried. We were on an Edge ski trip to Oahu, and I was like crying. I was like, I love your scandal. And I just started crying. So I was so starstruck and I just couldn't believe it. And I think just every day I drove into work, I was like, I can't believe I'm here. But I don't think it was until, like, I would get sick and I would get tired. But on the day to day, it was just kind of, you just went in and I just wanted to do everything I could to stay there and do the best job that I could and just keep reminding myself. Last year when I was still on air, if someone was like, how are you? And I would be like, living the dream. And everyone thought I was doing a gag, but it was me just like vocalizing to myself, you're living the dream. Don't forget this is a privilege. Don't take it for granted. And I think that was a big part of why I wanted to quit too, because I started to feel like I wasn't so much living the dream anymore and I didn't deserve to have the privilege of sitting in that seat if I didn't 100% enjoy it. I felt like that's taking a spot from somebody else that deserves it more than I do. And I think as soon as you forget what the privilege is of having a job as a broadcaster, that's when you need to walk away from it, because you're not going to do the best with the power of that microphone. And you are in so many people's brains and stuff every day that I think that's what it was for me, is like I just kind of, I felt increasingly older. I felt just tired, and I was just over having to come up with content every day, and I just felt like I had done everything that I could do, if that makes sense.
You'd hit the goals you wanted to hit?
Yes. Yeah. Like I'd achieved what I wanted to achieve. I loved it, but I felt like if I had stayed there another year, I probably would have started phoning it in. And I never wanted to phone it in, because being a radio announcer or any form of broadcaster is a privilege. And I never wanted to take that for granted. And I knew that if I stayed there, I would take it for granted.
Yeah. I'd like to touch on a couple of the bits that you might have found hard before we get into the huge change, obviously, that you made, which I think is so courageous and amazing. And you say there about, you know, producing content every single day. And I think that's one of the things that people might underestimate sometimes. There's this huge amount of energy that goes into producing content. There's no better way to put it, really. I mean, it's not a very specific word, but it is just this constant output of stories and jokes and gimmicks. And then it's not even just radio anymore. You have to have little video snippets and social media and yada, yada, yada. Was there anything in particular that you found hard on that front that you started to find particularly draining?
It is hard because you don't switch off. Like you're hanging out with your friends and they tell you a story that you're like, oh, that's really good. Can I tell that on air? Like you'd get home and be like, has the social media video gone up? Are people liking that social media video? Then you've got like the instant feedback of like something you've worked really hard on of like nobody gives a shit, or something you thought's really funny and people were like, you're shit. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, thank you very much. I was really proud of that. I remember one of my sons was going through like a really bad sleep regression and I was getting like 3 hours sleep a night. I was exhausted. And my boss at the time was like, you're just not bringing enough personal stories. I'm like, there's three fucking people on this show. They can bring personal stories too. Mm-hmm. I am not doing anything right now. Like I right now am just trying to survive.
I am doing nothing to tell a story about.
Yeah. So I would get to the point where I'd go get my nails done, and Sasha, who was doing my nails, she was like perfectly edge demographic. So I'd be like, Sasha, what's happening in your life, babe? What's happening? What's got? And then I would sit there and I would mine her life and like write it down on my phone. Be like, okay, cool. Can I use that? Okay, I'll change your name on this. And like, and I would write it all down, and then I'd use her life as my content and things like that. Or I just like think of the smallest, stupidest thing, like stupidest disagreement, and then just add, like I was having with Bryce or whatever, and just add shit tons of text to it to make it a story, because it's theater of the mind, right? And so, yeah, it's just constantly having to act like you're having this big, shiny, exciting life, when actually sometimes you just want to come home and watch TV and be a sloth. Or you haven't had time to do anything for yourself because you've got small humans. There's also like the social commentary. Like I would see social commentary of people being like, she's past it. She needs to be wheeled off and like blah, blah, blah. And your shit. And you're like, how would you feel if I came into your job at wherever you work and walked in and go, you know what? You're really shit at putting tires on. You know, the way you put tires on is so shit. And just like said the stuff that you say to me at your real life job. Or like, you should be gone, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, okay, well, thank you. Sadly, I can't, because I need to feed my family. So give me some constructive criticism. And I would say that to people on the text machine. I'd reply and be like, hey, I really appreciate your feedback, but can you give me some constructive criticism that I can take on? Because you're just telling me I'm shit. I can't get anything from that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes most of the time people would drop their nuts. Other times people would give you constructive criticism. And that was actually really helpful, and you would change things and improve it. You were getting like actual proper helpful feedback. But I also just had this thing where people would text in like really horrible things about any of us and about anyone on the show. And when it was completely out of line, I would ring back the text and be like, hey, and because their name would come up, you'd be like, hey, such and such. Hey, sorry, we got your text. It says, you are a useless sack of shit. Your mum should have, but then your text is cut off. Could you just tell us what the rest of the text said? And they would always, There was only one time in 20 years that this lady goes, I said that your mother should have aborted you. It was to Guy Williams, Clint Roberts and I. And we were like, oh my God, this is the funniest.
And she's like, just sticking with it.
She stuck with it so hard. She's like, you three are the worst people in the world. I went in and I was like, oh my God, this is the best. Like, but she was the only person that ever stood by, like, say something really nasty.
It is weird, right? Because I feel like people on social media as well, we're like, it's New Zealand. We're not big enough to have people running our social media accounts for us. But I actually think people are very accessible on social media in general. So people will send you this stuff on social media where it's like, they seem to think you won't see it, but you obviously will. But also these text machines where they're texting in and they often act like you won't see it, but you do. Do you think that's part of it, that people just kind of look for this outlet for angriness and think you won't see it? Like, what do you think drives this weirdness?
I think some people want the reaction and some people are just angry and jealous people. My favorite thing, though, is that usually when you get those sort of comments, they either don't have a profile and it's literally a profile they've made for trolling people, or it's a baby, or it's a car. Yeah. And so I'm always like, I remember someone wrote like really horrible to me on my Facebook page once, and I clicked on their profile. They had this massive like 9/11 conspiracy theory banner, and then their picture is literally their baby. And I was just thinking to myself, I just got called an effing stupid C word by a baby. It's the weirdest, like, it's the weirdest thing.
That is a weird feeling.
It's a weird feeling. And I'm like, power to you. Okay. But it is funny. Like, I always laugh that like the most sexist comments I get, I'll click through and it'll be a profile picture of a man and his daughter. And I'm like, how would you feel if I said that to your daughter? Like, are you actually teaching her these things? Like, it's, you almost have to kind of laugh at it. I mean, sometimes I do get really, really upset by it. Like, recently, one of my friends passed away suddenly, and like, she was one of my best friends. And I was asked by the family to like MC the funeral, and it was live streamed. And some fuckwit on Reddit, excuse me, I don't ask if I was allowed to swear on this. I'm hoping I can.
You can.
Someone sent it to me, and I was like, what the? Are you serious? And someone had done a post on Reddit. They didn't even know my friend. They had literally just been funeral cruising, which is the weirdest shit ever, and wrote this thing about annoying radio announcers and how they watched me MC a funeral and how like awful I was and how annoying I was and like all this stuff. And I was like, okay, critique my podcast, critique my radio show, critique my TV show. Don't ever critique the way I parent my children, and do not like critique me when I'm MCing one of my best friends' funerals. Like, it's a funeral, you idiot. And that really upset me. And so that was one, like, I think I screenshotted it and put it on my Instagram. I was like, this is fucked. But that happens to people all the time.
Yeah.
People just have this, I don't know, this anger, this jealousy, or like this like crusade in them that they feel like they can say that sort of stuff. And it's like, is that really what you want to add to the world? And basically bringing down female announcers or presenters and ragging on them, because none of them are going to mention any of the annoying men. I can't wrap my head around that at all. That part of my job, I just absolutely hate. I hate it so much. Racks me up.
No, it absolutely does. And some of that stuff, the really public access to you, I feel like that. Like, I love social media. I love all the rest of it. But there's sometimes I feel like we all know too much about each other. I'm fine with people having their opinions. Why do they feel the need to make it my problem, though? Like, group chat with the friends. Like, you know?
Life is full of ups and downs. So no matter what your everyday looks like, KiwiBank has the products and services to help you manage your money your way. To find out more, head to kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is KiwiBank.
Anyway, you started to feel this feeling of you're ready to go for all of these very good reasons. Was that a bit scary, though?
When I came back after having my second son, he was 3 months premature. It was super traumatic. There was moments where I genuinely thought, that I was going to die. I lost, like, I had to get bags and bags of blood after, like, the one of three labors that I, well, two of the three labors he put me in. And it was traumatic. And then going back to work after something like that, you haven't had time to process it. You're going back into a job where you're performing. You're going back into a job where you've been away for 9 months. So people have got used to new routines. And I didn't know how to balance two kids. And I would have been a nightmare to work with, like, because I just couldn't concentrate fully because I was trying to balance two kids at home. I was trying to readjust into my job. I didn't know at the time I had ADHD. So I just couldn't keep all the balls up, I guess. And so I think that's when I started to casually have thoughts of, like, fuck this. And then last year, there was just like a lot of change in my show because we had somebody go back to another station. Steph, my co-host, was going on mat leave. And then we had a new show at the end. And I just also had some stuff going on in my life that it was just overwhelming. Like, my whole mornings were consumed with helping people that needed help. And I was in a constant flight mode. I was constantly stressed. I was worried. I was like all sorts of things. And then I was interviewing John Kirwan, and he was like, his dad had said to him, if you died tomorrow, would you be happy? And I just couldn't stop thinking about that question. And I realized that I wouldn't be. And it wasn't in like any disrespect to the people I was working with or something, anything like that. I just felt like I didn't have any of me left. I felt like everybody, like, work was getting all of me. I had friends that were getting all of me because they really needed me. And then at home, I was like giving as much as I could, but I was kind of not really doing great anywhere. It was just kind of surviving. I remember I went into work and I'd had a really stressful morning. Well, scary mornings with one of my friends, and I was really upset. And I went into work and I saw Leon, who was like a second dad to me, and he's also my big boss. And it was quite funny because it was also the day that we got like results of like ratings, and people thought I was crying about ratings, but I wasn't. I was crying about something that had happened that morning, and I was like having a full panic about whether or not I had done the right thing. And we end up in this office, Leon and I, and I was talking to him about it, and he was like, nah, you've done the right thing, blah, blah, blah. And then we just started talking about radio, what we love about it, what we don't love about it, what we thought was good, what we thought wasn't. And then I just said to him, I was like, do you think I'm done? Because I feel like I'm done. And then he was like, okay. He was like, I didn't think it would be now. And then we kind of decided in that room. I was like, yeah, I think I am. I was like, I just need to talk to Bryce, because Bryce and I had discussed it before. The only time I felt scared was in the in-between. There was like a week in between where I knew that I was quitting and it just had to be confirmed. But as soon as like my new contract was signed, I was able to tell everybody. It was like a massive weight was off my shoulders, and I've not looked back. I've been waiting to feel like I thought I would feel jealous when the new show started. Not an ounce. I thought I would miss it. I don't. I thought I'd have all of these feelings of like, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? What have I done? I haven't. And now I'm just kind of in that period of figuring out, what do I do now? Like, do I have a gap year and go back to radio next year? Do I do a podcast? Do I do something completely different? It's just kind of figuring that out, which is exciting and weird.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because there's the financial side to it too, right? I mean, there's all of the very good reasons that you've laid out for feeling done and done with that bit. But I'm sure, you know, you've got kids, you've got a family. I don't know if you still have a mortgage. Most people at your age do.
Yep.
So there we go. So what was that conversation like? Did you have to talk to your husband and be like, hey, you want to do this? Can the finances hack it? Or what did you have on that conversation?
Bryce was, I'm very lucky that my husband has a good job. You know, like, not many people have that privilege to be able to quit their job. You know, like, so many people work in jobs they hate because they have to. And so we sat down, he was like, okay, give me your things that each payday you need to do, whether it's like paying off your credit card or your gym membership and your phone and all that stuff. And then Bryce is really good with money. And so he sat down and like worked out a budget. He's like, okay, He goes, well, it's obviously going to be harder. Things are going to be tighter. We're not going to be able to do those things anymore. We're not going to be able to do those things anymore. That will have to be put on hold. Because I work part-time for MediaWorks. So it was like finding out what that salary was going to be. But then making sure that I could get income in other ways, whether it's like doing influencer stuff or emceeing corporate events. But yeah, it's just tightening up on the luxuries and going back to the basics. Even just like little things. We used to get really lazy and use Milk Run all the time, which is like a godsend for parents when your kids are too crazy to take the supermarket and it's like $8 to deliver. But we also didn't realize it was slightly more expensive. So now it's like, okay, we now will order it and then someone will go pick it up or someone will just go to the supermarket. Getting a babysitter as often as we did, it's more like, well, do we both need to go to that or can just one of us go or something like that? So yeah, it's just kind of tightening up everything around us.
And you mentioned there on the career stuff, because I think that's the big, as it was quite a sudden change, right? To decide that you were done.
It was.
Just done, out of here.
Yeah.
And so lay out for me what it was like when you sat down, you did the budget, and then you're thinking, okay, what am I going to do to bring some cash in? And you're looking at, like you say, you've got the part-time job, some influencing, helping other people with their social media. How intentional was all of that? Or was that more just sort of like you put the word out and stuff came through and you gave it a crack?
I don't like doing contract negotiations. Also, I felt like I was too close with Leon that I could sit down with him and he never would. He's always been very fair to me. I'd always joke with him. I was like, I reckon you could talk me into a pay decrease. And I don't like having awkward conversations. Like, it's making me uncomfortable just talking about it. I'm just like, eh. So I always used my agent. She's such a weapon. Like, she's just so good at her job and she's so thoughtful. And I talked about it with her. She's like, okay, well, this is what we can achieve on social. This is where we can look at corporate stuff. Maybe you could try doing something like this. And we kind of made a plan of like different ways that I could bring in revenue. And then also it's just like word of mouth. Like, my friend got me a corporate MC job, which was fabulous. My social media job came through a friend's friend. But like, I was so more than happy, and this is going to sound weird, but like I said to Bryce, I was like, well, if we need some extra cash, like I could see if I could go work at Tosca up the road, like the little coffee place I go to every day, and see if Blurtle will give me a couple of shifts a week. You know, like, I'm so happy doing that. Like, I loved working in retail. And he was like, you know, no, you don't need to do that. Like, we just need to like not get takeaways all the time. I'm like, oh, okay. But I was happy. Like, if we needed to, I'd kind of do anything because I just like being out and amongst people. Like, there's a new bookstore up the road. I'd go happily go and work in the bookstore.
You've hit the giving it a crack stage.
Yeah. Because I don't know what I want to do. Like, I could very well just go back into radio next year and work for a different station. Like, sure. Or I could try and do like a podcast. One of my favorite radio announcers ever, Robert Taylor, he went and did like building or something, or was working in forestry for like a couple of years. And now he's back on the radio. People like go and learn different things. Like, I'm studying Te Reo Māori at the moment, which I'm loving, like using my brain in a different way. And just kind of thinking, do I want to go back into it, or do I want to try doing something else, like something completely different? Like, I've also got this interest in like working with like neurodiverse kids, like going and being like a learning support and things like that. Yeah, it's like the world is my oyster at the moment, but still taking opportunities to make money when I can.
Well, what's been your attitude to money in general, right? Because I do think it's funny. Media is one of those careers where it does often attract people who you can earn a lot depending on where you end up. You can earn quite a bit. But often the people in those jobs are very creative brains. So I know I've talked to a lot of people who've been in the media industry, made a lot, spent a lot, don't really have much to show for when this amazing ride comes to an end, right? So what about yourself? What's your attitude been to money? Did you invest, pay off mortgage, or did you kind of come to the end and be like, I don't know?
Well, I guess that's kind of the thing, is that like with our sorts of jobs, they are definitely the sorts of jobs where you've got to make hay while the sun's shining, because you could have the job and earn great money for 3 years, or you could be there for 25, 30 years or whatever. But it's not the sort of job you're going to work until you're 65, probably.
Yeah.
Like, we did have an investment property, but we sold it last year and just slammed it on our mortgage to make our like get our mortgage down as much as possible. And then we decided, because knowing that I was probably going to leave in the next like 2 years at that time, Bryce is the money guy because I am a spender, which is a little bit like I'm really impulsive, which is like a bit of my ADHD. We both get paid into our separate accounts and then I keep my spending money and then I give all my money to Bryce and then he does savings, mortgage, he does everything. When I was younger, because my dad, both of our dads were in banking. So my parents started like savings accounts for us when we were born and we'd get like $10 a week from the day we were born. When we got a bit older and there was more in there, Dad bought us like $1,000 worth of shares in Auckland Airport, which I should have kept because they're worth so much now. And then we got shares in Wakefield Hospital and Contact Energy. And he always encouraged us like do bonus bonds or like do whatever. Mm. And one of my sisters is really good at that. I ended up selling Dad my Auckland Airport and Contact Energy shares to pay for radio school, which is great.
Investing in income.
No, he's making money off my shares. But yeah, they always kind of taught us like you should always save like 20% of your paycheck or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did try to do that. Also, when I first moved to Auckland, everything was so much more expensive. So I used to just like take out cash. So I'd have get paid and I would have one little money bag of $10 notes. And it was like $10 a day for lunch, whatever. And then I'd have two bags that were for weekend one and weekend two of payday. And so I just have all my money out in cash and then give the rest to my mum. So I'm the sort of person that is impulsive and I spend. And so I need other people to guard my money because I don't have the discipline to guard it. I know that's bad because I'm almost 40 and I should know better. But
lean into your personality. I always say this. Don't try and force yourself into being someone you're not. Figure out your personality, be honest, and lean into it. So when you find people to help you guard your money, is that like a Bryce job? Like, I assume you'd need someone you trust quite a lot.
Yes. So it either goes to Bryce or it'll go to my mum. And my mum will look after it. Like I was saving up for a Deadly Pony's backpack. And so each payday I'd give my mum money. And then when I'd saved enough, she'd transfer me the money. But she also wouldn't give it back. So if I ran out of money that payday, I'd be like, oh, can you give me $50 from my savings thing? She's like, nah.
This is like an Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor.
Yeah, 100%. She's like, nah, because then you won't get your backpack. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. I won't get this cool top from Lippy.
I love that mums literally never clock out. Here you are a mum yourself and you're still getting your mum to help you with the budget. And I just, that's such classic mum life. I think, honestly, most mums never clock out.
Oh, my mum still does my tax return for me. Like she used to be, to her credit, she was like a financial administrator. So that's her thing.
Oh, okay,
but great. What's interesting though, is that I'm really hard on my son's saving money. So they both have KiwiSavers, which Bryce's parents started for them. But we have a saving account for them as well, each, like what our parents did. But with Tyson, he has money box and he puts all his coins that he gets for like doing jobs and stuff like that. And if he wants to buy something, I'm like, well, you have to buy it out of your money box. Do you want to give me $20 in your money box, which means that you only have this much money in there? Or do you want to save up? So like last year, he saved up to go to the Waitomo Caves. And we said, you got to pay for your ticket. You got to pay $10 for petrol, $20 for the hotel, and $10 for food. So that he kind of knows you have to pay for things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at telling them what to do, just not good at doing it myself.
Isn't it funny though that the parenting journey, and this won't be the same for everyone, parenting is obviously so individual, but I found that it's made me, it's really brought out sides of myself I didn't see coming. Obviously on the money front, I'm quite into investing and saving and all that stuff. That's probably not surprising to anyone. But what I struggle with personally is if I'm talking to someone and they say something that I disagree with or don't like or whatever, but they're someone I'm really close to, that's something I really struggle to call people out on because it is a hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
But what I've found is if it's in front of my kids and they're saying something right, they're saying something that I'm like, that's not right, that's not okay to say, I will shut that shit down so fast. I'm like, don't you dare say that in front of my kids. Say whatever you want in your own life. You're not saying that in front of my kids right now. They're too young to process it. And it sounds like a similar thing for you with the money stuff, where you're like, oh God, can't wrap my head around it. Mom, Bryce, help me out. Come on, team. You've got a team, so you can lean on them, which is great. But when it's your kids, it's like, no, 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 no. you're going to do well on this.
It sounds so morbid. But anytime we've been to a funeral, after the funeral, I always say to Bryce, like, just as we're going to sleep, I'm like, Bryce, can you make sure that you've got somewhere the passwords and stuff for the bank and the power and stuff? Because I don't know what that is. I don't even know who our power's with. And he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah. Yeah, sweet is. I'm like, okay, sweet. Because I don't. Like, he looks after all of that. I get the spark bill and that's it. Like, apart from that, I'm like, who are we with again? But I, like, that's just, everyone has their job. That's Bryce's job is that stuff. My job is different stuff.
That's actually, I don't know if you know, that's actually a really smart thing. That's called a legacy folder, where you've got all of the stuff of, like, here is the power company, here's where the investments are, here's the savings accounts, here's the, just all of the financials in a spot, obviously somewhere safe and secure because you don't want someone breaking in. But, you know, it's really smart to have. And for anyone listening, I do think that's a good idea because things happen, right? I mean, you say it sounds morbid, but it's true.
I have a legacy folder, but it's my funeral songs and my wishes for my funeral and a eulogy I wrote for myself to make people laugh. Because I remember my cousin did that when she had cancer. And because Bryce is the sort of person that always goes, this is my funeral song. I want this at my funeral. And I'm like, what the fuck is this song? I'm not going to remember this song.
Write it down.
This is why so many old people end up having Ave Maria.
Oh my God, that's so funny. You said something earlier that I want to touch base on briefly, and I know we're running up on time, but you were talking about paying off the mortgage when you knew you were coming up to quitting. And I think that says an interesting thing in terms of money values, which is so personal to all of us. The different things that motivate us when it comes to money. Like for me, I know that one of my core money values is independence. I want to know that I'm good in terms of people can't tell me what to do, that I can say, no, you don't. You don't have any hold over me because I'm, you know, set enough. I've got breathing space. And you said about, you know, paying off the mortgage, and it sounded to me like a security money value. Now, is that the right reading? Like, what would you say is one of your core money values, and how have you set yourself up with that?
Well, we obviously have KiwiSaver and stuff for our retirement. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the nature of our jobs, we don't know how long that they will last.
Yeah.
So getting rid of that as fast as possible so that it's not a bill we have to worry about is kind of a motivator for that. Because if, say, Bryce came off here at the end of this year and we're both trying to freelance or whatever, we'd not be able to pay our mortgage. Like, it would, like, we'd have our savings and stuff like that, but it would be like a high stress scenario of like, oh, frick, like, what do we do? And so I think we've just tried to make hay while the sun's shining so that when that ends, it's one less thing we have to worry about. I'd have to ask Bryce his reasoning, but my reasoning would be just so that if it all turned to shit, because there's so many people getting made redundant and stuff like that, that we've got ourselves in a position where we can cope with what's left behind and not lose our house.
Yeah, that stable home base is, that's one thing that I'm very focused on now, having my own business, is knowing that, you know, income can be lumpy, is I'm very keen on, you know, the stable home base. If that's sorted, all the investments and stuff is great. But if I know the family's good, got the roof over our heads, that to me is a massive money value for me, having that safety security.
Yeah, totally. And I think, like, then once we paid off, like, who knows, I have, this is where I should have had, made sure Bryce was here so he could step in. Like our investment property we had for 6 years or something, and it was like, okay, let's just sell it now, and then it's one less thing to worry about. And we sold it, and it was perfect timing for us, which was really good. No. Thankfully.
So one of the last things I want to touch on, coming back to the dream job point of view, is, I mean, this is very much a my perspective, and I'd like to know your perspective on it, because I think there are so many different experiences on this. One of the things I've come to realize in my life, anytime I've thought I had the dream job, it's actually gone really badly for me. There are two instances I can think of particularly where I wanted it so bad, and I was like, this is the dream, and then got into it, and it just, I don't know if sometimes thinking of something as a dream job leads to a weird power dynamic where you're too emotionally invested and so things go squiffy. But then, you know, maybe something else can happen with it where it's like sometimes they know there's a big queue of people ready to go. And so that leads to a different dynamic where you feel very replaceable, which isn't always nice either. But again, I'm not saying that's your experience. That's just what happened to me a couple of times. I'd like to know, you know, you had what so many people would consider the dream job, what so many people wanted. Looking back on it, do you think there is such a thing as the dream job? Would you still say it was the dream job?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the dream job does exist. And I think one thing that people forget is to, and I say this to my friends all the time, like when they achieve something really massive that they've worked really hard for is, and even like when we would interview upcoming pop stars or whatever, I would always say to them, like, are you taking a moment to enjoy it? Like, yeah. Are you taking a moment to be like, holy fuck, I'm doing it? Like, are you actually taking it in, or are you just going one thing to the next thing? And, you know, like, just like, okay, I've got engaged now. Now I'm going to get married. Now I'm going to have a baby. Now I'm going to have my dream job. Now I'm going to do this. Now I'm going to buy a house. And it's just like you're ticking off a checklist instead of actually stopping and going, holy crap, I did it. This is amazing. And sometimes, like, and sometimes the dream isn't always perfect all the time, but I think it's just, you know, it's like when you meet the person that you marry, it's not perfect all the time. And sometimes it doesn't work out and sometimes it does, but it's not roses all the time. You have to work really hard at it. So I think it's just like appreciating that it does come with, like, the dream job does come with shit that sucks, but everything does.
Yeah.
Nothing in your life is going to come to you with something that doesn't suck. You know, like, you can try really hard to have a baby like we did, and then you have your baby and you're like, yay. And then the baby like decides to come 3 months early. You know, it's like every single good thing has an element to it that sucks. It's just all about how you adapt to it, and you can either embrace it or let it beat you down.
I love that perspective so much.
Sometimes you get Uber Eats and you don't get your sweet and sour sauce. It's the greatest thing in the world. And then there's something that sucks. It's just something like that, you know?
And you're like, why did I even get this if there's no sweet and sour sauce? What's the point?
Remembering it's not going to be perfect, but it's how I approach the parts that aren't perfect is what's going to make the dream still the dream.
When you look back, is there anything you would have done differently with your time?
For sure. The biggest thing is, I wouldn't have cared so much about what particular people thought. I wouldn't have been so invested on whether or not they liked me. I think I would have believed in myself a bit more. Or one time I had to pash Mike Perez.
Wait, is this before or after he came out?
After. After. It was for a Wheel of Death thing, or the Dice of Deer or something. And
which one of you was less keen?
It was during the Rugby World Cup, and it was like French kiss. And so we were like, okay. But I was with Bryce at the time, and I pashed Mike, and I was like, Mike's one of my really good friends. And I was like, oh, this is weird. But we did it. We both consented. We did it. And then Bryce, I didn't think Bryce would care, because I was like, he's gay. Like, he's not, it's not like I'm hooking up with, you know, someone that's straight or whatever. It's like literally just, you know. But Bryce is like, no, I was like super keen on it. So probably in hindsight, wouldn't have pashed Mike. Yeah, that's probably not because he was a bad passion or anything, but just maybe wasn't a great, didn't make Bryce feel great.
Had to have a little tricky conversation.
Yeah. And I remember his boss walking past me and he was like, Pash Mike, interesting move. And I was like, oh my God. And that was just like that moment of realizing, don't do anything on the radio you're going to regret later.
That's a good rule of thumb. All right. And the very last one, if you had to pick, I mean, obviously so many balls in the air at the moment, but if you had to pick, 12 months from now, where do you think you'll be?
I genuinely have no idea. I know I have to pick something. I'll definitely be doing a podcast of some form.
Nice. Can't wait.
Yeah, because like everyone has podcasts. I'll definitely be an overbearing mother that wants to be part of everything. I want to say in a year's time I would have finished my Reo Māori diploma. I'm like, I don't know, maybe someone will talk me back into going to radio. Like, I don't know. I really don't. My thing is, though, I want to work smarter, not harder.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I'm doing, it'll be working smarter, not harder. I don't want to go back to never being around.
I love that. I love that for you.
Dude, but the old payday doesn't love it.
Yeah.
So I'm figuring it out.
The financial advisor is like, go back to work.
I'm not on first name basis with the couriers anymore because they don't come around as much.
Oh, God. Well, I tell you what, whatever podcast it is you launch, if it's anything other than true crime is not my jam. But anything other than that, I will listen in and I will be so excited for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll tell you what I won't be doing, a financial podcast, because I am a bad, bad financial person.
Well, you're welcome back on this one anytime. We can have a giggle through some money chat.
Maybe you should interview Bryce next time. He's probably the better one to talk to rather than me.
We'll just have him like sitting over your shoulder, just occasionally face palming, being like, no, no, that's not what we're doing. No.
He would. He honestly would. He would do that. God, I'm glad he hasn't walked in during this. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. That's Sharon Casey, future podcast host, not a future financial advisor, but can't wait to see what happens to you in the future. Now, if you have more questions about this, anything else to do with money, more people you'd like to come on the show, get in touch. I got as much of it as I could into this episode. Some people saw that me and Sharon had been talking, so they had some questions, so we got them in there. So if there's more, come and find me. I am pretty much everywhere you want to be on social media. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok as Frances Cook NZ. But most importantly, make sure you subscribe to the Making Sense podcast. Everywhere you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.